Hello and welcome to Third Ear. Today, we're going to have a show in English. Recently, we had a visit from Julie Shapiro, who's the artistic director of the Third Coast Audio Festival based in Chicago. The Third Coast Audio Festival is a festival for radio makers across America. And Julie Shapiro is, if anyone, the person in America who knows most about what's good in American radio right now. So we asked her to bring along just a tiny selection of things we can listen to. The Third Ear International project, which this is our very first production, hopes to bring you a lot of radio from around the world, some collaborative works with radio makers from other countries. If Danish is your language of choice, then don't worry, we'll be back with a Danish show next time. At the end of the show, I'll let you know some web addresses and other information you may need to know if you want to find out more about American radio. This show was recorded in front of a live studio audience in a cinema in the middle of Copenhagen. Julie Shapiro.
Hello, everyone. I have a title. It doesn't necessarily mean that much, but it's Artistic Director of the Third Coast International Audio Festival. We are 10 years old. We're from Chicago. And the short form is we curate and celebrate amazing, sound-rich radio work from around the world.
So we're not going to waste too much time chatting. I'm going to let Julie introduce the first piece that she'd like to play for you.
It's called Mrs. Morris. That's who was being interviewed. And it's from the Happiness Project by a Canadian artist named Charles Spearin, who went around to all of his neighbors and just interviewed them about happiness and then used their voice, bringing out the musicality of their voices to play a duet with them on his various instruments. So,
happiness is love. Happiness is love. Love make you keep happy. You can't just love yourself and you don't love other people. You got to love people. And the love is right there. It make you feel happy to know that you're my neighbor. And I love you. And you could able to come over today to invite me over. What do you think that is? I'm feeling happy.
Same.
Yes.
It's a simple recipe, I guess.
Yes. I'm feeling happy to know that, you know, somebody cares. And that's a big love. You know, I can come out through the door and I say, good morning. What makes you feel so happy? Right? Oh, love. That's what I find it is. Make you happy. I come out in the morning, I see Mr. Gary. I can say, good morning, Mr. Gary. I can sit and talk to him because I'm happy. I can go back in and I can smile and say, oh, we were changing thought this morning. Hey? So nice. So good. I love that. Love makes you happy.
We like to start people off. I should say we do this quite a lot. We bring people together to listen as a community because it's a little bit different than listening on your iPod or on the radio where you're usually by yourself and maybe you can't really respond. You can talk back to the radio, but you're not going to get a conversation going that way. So we really, Third Coast does this a lot and really, especially in this time where things are getting very technologically inclined, we like to actually just bring people into a room and play beautiful things for them. So we have a weekly show on in Chicago where we curate an hour's worth of documentary work every week. We have a website with, I think, about 750 pieces on it right now. It's constantly growing, a big audio library to listen to stuff. But the danger is talking too much about radio without listening, so let's hear something else just to get you in further into the mood. This piece, it's called The Lord God Bird, and it's by two producers that go by, they have a company called Long Haul Productions, Dan Collison and Elizabeth Meister. Their work airs on National Public Radio, and it airs locally around Chicago in the Midwest. This is from a series they did where they collaborated with musicians, and they went out and identified stories, did lots of interviews, gave the interview tape to various musicians. So the musician they collaborated with on this piece is Sufjan Stevens. And it's a piece called The Lord God Bird, and it's about a couple of years ago there was a sighting of this woodpecker that everyone thought had gone extinct. And then there was sort of these rumors that it had reappeared in this town, very small town in Arkansas, really sort of small town America, economically depressed, et cetera. And it really pumped new life and optimism into this town. So they went there right when this was happening and did a little portrait of the town with the help of Sufjan. This piece runs about 11 minutes.
My name is Sandra Kimmer, and I'm executive director and secretary and dishwasher and mop pusher, anyway, for the Brinkley Chamber of Commerce. And I was born in Brinkley, and it's flat since we're on the Delta, and you can see forever.
In the Delta sun, down in Arkansas, it's the great God bird with its song to call.
It's a place where you can find spiritual solace. We have so many churches.
I am Gene DePriest, the owner of Gene's Barbecue and Restaurant in Brinkley, Arkansas. I came to Brinkley in 1957. I was born and raised a 15 mile of here. It was like 5,200 population in Brinkley. It's down to 3,800 now. So it's a strictly farming community.
It's a place where you can call a wrong number and talk for 5 minutes.
My name is Penny Childs. I'm owner and operator of Penny's Family Hair Care. We have a good little town. We have a good group of people. It's just our economy is not real good. You know, minimum wage jobs is what we mostly have.
We have lots of tree-lined streets.
I'm Billy Clay, and I'm currently, they're letting me be mayor of Brinkley for a little while.
We have people that care about their community and about the children, which we really do feel are our future.
We're coming up on graduation, and that is, to me, a very sad occasion because we're exporting these young people out because there's not anything really primarily to hold them. You know, some will go off to college, but they won't return.
On the great bayou where they saw it fall, it's the great God bird down in Arkansas.
My name is Gene Sparling. I'm an amateur woodsman and a naturalist and adventurer from Arkansas. Was kayaking through Bayou de Vue in February of 2004 and was in a particularly ancient primeval section of forest. Came around a small bend. I'd set my paddle down and was sitting back in my kayak, reveling in the peace and beauty and wonder of the place I was in. And a large bird flew into the channel and landed on a tree, and I thought to myself, that looks like a woodpecker on steroids.
We learned today great comebacks are still possible in this great country, and this is a big one. The ivory-billed woodpecker, last seen back in 1944 and thought to be extinct since then. It has been rediscovered in Arkansas. The bird, once believed magical by Native Americans.
Legend has it, when people would see one, they would exclaim in shock, "Lord God, what a bird."
Industrial God on the great bayou where they saw it fall. It's the great God bird down in Arkansas.
Ooh. Well, when I first heard that they had spotted it, of course, I was like everybody else, you got to be kidding. But I had been in the area where they found it, and I'm almost sure I've seen it before. But I didn't know what I was looking at. So, you know, it's one of those things that just looked like a small pterodactyl coming out of a tree to me.
I'm Chuck Walner. I've been in Brinkley since 1946. And I was raised right within a mile of where they probably discovered this bird. A boy growing up, I wasn't really interested in looking at that bird. Back then, I was interested in catching me a crappie or a bass or catching me a coon or whatever it took to survive out in the swamp. And it's a beautiful place. I've been spending many happy hour out there.
My name is Boysaw White. I'm the fire chief of Brinkley Fire Department. I've seen some big woodpeckers back there, but I never knew that they had one extinct, you know, like this. So there's a good possibility, yes, I've seen the bird. Just didn't realize it. But, I mean, this is deer and deer season, so I'm concentrating on deer and wishing this woodpecker gone.
I I really didn't know anything like about the Audubon Society or anything like that. I've never been into birds.
I thought woodpeckers was all woodpeckers.
Now, if it was a new duck, it'd be the greatest thing in the world. Everybody in the world would be talking about this new species of duck. But like I say, this is a woodpecker, and people just weren't taking it at first to heart.
Truth was, I was a little bit ticked off at first, you know, because here I am, been out here fishing and hunting for some 40 years, and then all of a sudden they say you can't set foot on this property.
Wildlife officials also trying to protect the bird's habitat by closing 5,000 acres of popular fishing and hunting areas. KRK4.
But, you know, after thinking about the bird and what it could do for this area, possibly bring into the economy and to this town and surrounding towns, sure, I'm for it. But if the bird watchers can watch, the hunters ought to be able to hunt, and the fishermen ought to be able to fish. That's my opinion.
And the hunters beware, or the fishers fall. And paradise might close from its safe flight flood. It's the great God birth through it all.
You ready to order?
Let me have your rib special.
Rib special, you want it dry or with sauce?
Welcome to Gene's Barbecue.
Home of the yellow-billed woodpecker.
No, it's
ivory.
Ivory-billed.
You got your shirts in, I love them.
Oh, I love that. That looks really good.
Well, on the front it said Gene's Barbecue and Restaurant. The back says home of the ivory-billed burger. The bird is the word. Well, it's two big hamburger patties, two slices of mozzarella cheese, pepper bacon, and a sesame seed bun.
Gene's had this ivory-billed cheeseburger. We said, well, if he can have a cheeseburger, I can have a haircut. Woodpecker haircut, $25. It'll come to a point at the top, fire engine red. And then the back and sides are tight with black on that and then a little bit of white in the front. Kind of copying his nose a little bit, you know.
You know, you got to realize we're here in the Delta. We're right next door to the poorest county in the whole United States. And we have been wanting something, praying for an industry.
We're here on the interstate halfway between Memphis and Little Rock, and we are going to put skirts on our billboards, Ivory Bill Woodpecker Exit 216.
My name is Doug Hunt. Some guy, I don't know who said this, said there'd be 3,000 people come from England out of the Audubon Society. Now those people got money.
I'm Ronnie Steinbeck, and I own and operate Paradise Wings Hunting Lodge, which I'm going to have to change to Paradise Wings Lodge. What I'm hoping to do is to do boat tours. It'll have to be small boats, and we'll have to be camouflaged and go in there just real quiet with trolling motors and ease through those trees and see if we can actually find them.
We have good duck hunting here. It's 3 months out of the year, November, December, January. It's real good, and then it fades out. But this bird thing is going to be good the year-round. And my business has already improved like 20%. Everybody's enthused.
We are just so excited. I get phone calls all day. You know, I have an old pattern of a woodpecker, and I just might see if I can quilt something up like that.
I draw my pattern out on the board, and then I just follow the lines. I'm Rita Clements, and I have Rita's Art. I have a shop. And that's basically what I've been working on is the woodpecker cutouts.
You know, we have a Rita Clements, wonderful artist, and here she is just barely making it, thinking she's going to have to move down to Louisiana. Maybe she could sell more down there. Well, now she's not going to have to move. You know, she's going to be able to make a living.
What I'm really hoping for them to be able to do is find the nest and find where it's at and then set up a video there at his nest where someone that's just come off the interstate can just cruising right on over there to the convention center, go in. They got a big screen set up there where that you can see the woodpecker on his nest doing what the woodpecker's doing. And that way everybody in the whole public in the world, even though you haven't seen it for real, but you could actually say you actually seen an ivory-billed woodpecker.
He is an important bird right now, very important bird. Like he's just been resurrected.
Stands out in my mind, I'm 41, I've been in Brinkley 22 years, is the tornado. And that just happened a few years ago, and it was an F4, and that was really bad. But we're just small, never going to get noticed or recognized for anything, and it's great.
It's just natural that people want something good to happen, and so I have no problem with Gene marketing his hamburger and calling it an ivory bill, and it's a good sandwich, too. I think there could be a point where it might get a little crass or gaudy, but this is United States of America. That's what makes us great, you know. And if it helps him give two more waitresses jobs here and they can pay taxes, you know, and they can go to Walmart or they can go to the local cottage mall and buy something that they want, that's what we're all about. And free enterprise, oh, that's America. That's what makes us great.
We've got to protect him for our kids. If he leaves, then all of this revenue and possibilities that we had will be gone. And that's what I've been telling people. Love the bird, because I think we're going to love what he's going to do for our town.
And the watchers beware, lest they see it fall, and paradise might laugh when at last it falls. And the sewing machine, the industrial god, and is the great god bird with its altar.
Okay, well, this next one was produced by a student. Actually, it was one of her first pieces. Her name's Molly Menschel, and she was enrolled at a really fantastic program at the SALT Institute for Documentary Studies, which is in Portland, Maine. And SALT is currently responsible for training a lot of the younger interested radio producers now. So this is called Just Another Fish Story, and it's a sort of collective memory piece about what happened in a town called Lubeck, Maine. So now we're on the East Coast. Very strong accents again, and they're just all remembering the same thing that happened back in the past. It's about 8.5 minutes.
The story about the whale. The story about the whale, see? I understand it's a fish story and all this stuff. It is a big fish. But what happened years ago here in Lubeck, Maine? There was a whale got tangled up in the fisherman's lines way off, somewhere off a quarter head. You're way out to sea then, see? And it drifted in the shore. It just couldn't swim. So the tide carried it in, and it landed on the beach over here in Lubeck, not too far from here, see? I saw it. I was down there.
Oh, it was big. I couldn't tell you how long or...
The whale was roughly 55 to 60
56 and a half feet long.
A 70-foot animal. That's almost the size of an 18-wheel truck.
To me, it was huge.
It was huge.
It was huge.
Laying down, it would be as high as this ceiling.
It was the largest animal I ever saw.
No wonder in the Holy Bible it says, Jonah went into the belly of the whale. There's plenty of room there. That mouth was a big one.
It was laying there right on top of the beach.
And it was laying on its side.
I remember it was blackish, grayish color. Grayish
it wasn't gray anymore. He wasn't grayish, blackish.
It was mostly black and white.
He was white, more whitish, grayish.
And there was a lot of wounds on it, old scars.
What it looked like was a vicious animal to me.
I mean, it was a monster.
But I wasn't frightened because it was dead.
His mouth happened to be open. It was a dead fish, but his mouth happened to be open.
It might have been middle of August or so.
Yeah, August, September. Yeah, I can't. Sure.
Evidently, it washed up in the night, and someone spotted it after daylight laying there on the beach.
That was early in the morning. The word had started to spread that this whale had washed ashore, and people started coming in.
I went down by myself, but there were plenty of people around.
Oh, the first day when it washed up, I went down.
Yeah, we took the kids down to see it.
The little kids were running up to it and touching it.
Climbing up on top of the whale, standing on it and get the pictures taken.
Sold hot dogs or something. Made a little money.
I think people in a small town handle death in a different way. They have to deal with it a lot more often. Everybody knows everybody, so when someone dies, the whole town grieves. I actually went down there. It was coming on to sunset, and I sat on the beach and smoked a cigarette and bawled my eyes out. Yeah, that's what I done. And I never went back down. And we lived probably 1,000 feet from the beach.
The mystery in the whole thing is how he got there. Nobody knows if it died off in the bay and floated ashore, or whether it grounded itself out and died on the beach, or whether it just got confused. Nobody knows.
It washed up on a beach.
He got snarled up, could have been.
I guess that's what happened to him, he drowned.
Couldn't get clear.
You know, if this is where it wanted to be. They called the Coast Guard to see if they could tow it back offshore and let it go some other town, but they wouldn't do it.
Because it had already been a couple other places, and that's what they done. They towed it out, and Lubeck finally wound up with it.
There was no boats big enough.
And depending upon the way the wind was blowing when the current was running, some things are almost impossible to get rid of.
And this thing laid on the beach for days while the town was trying to determine whether how they was going to get rid of it.
And it sat there.
Just passing the buck.
Because government didn't know what to do. They were arguing. One branch of government arguing.
It was too big to move. You couldn't move it. You couldn't do anything.
We're a very poor town. We're the poorest county in the state of Maine. And that we would be the ones having to put the
bill. In a small town, Lubeck, it was big doings.
Well, the people in the town office, and the whole nine yards were all disturbed because, like any dead body, it began to smell, you know, it stink the town. A lot of people were saying, we got to move out of here on account of the odor from this whale, see?
You could smell it. Low tide smells around here anyways, but this reeked of death.
Rotten meat sat in the sun for a month. You just take the cover off the can, stick your head in there, and that's just about what it smelled like.
It was a oily, greasy smell.
It was right in your nose.
Oh, it smelled like rotten meat.
Rotten fish and oil.
The odor, they couldn't stand it. You know, when the wind was blowing that direction right on the town.
You could smell it from miles away.
As far away as Eastport, Maine, they could smell it.
Oh, I touched it. Probably felt the same as what it did almost when it was alive, cold. They're cold-blooded.
And it did have a funny feeling. The texture of the animal was
a great big smooth piece of rubber.
I touched it with one finger, and I had to use less oil to get
the stench really hard to get off your hands.
I put hand cleaner on my hands. I put straight gasoline.
You have to wind up bleaching it off your hands, and that's what I wound up doing.
And finally they decided something had to be done about it.
It would come to the point where no matter what it cost, it had to go.
They knew something had to be done.
It had to be done.
And they did something.
One thing led to another, so they called Ramsel, a man named Ramsel. I was notified by the town of Lubeck. They contacted me to come down and dig a hole with that excavator. It was kind of a hazy, overcast day, and the sun didn't shine. I think there was like a crowd of 15 or 20 people actually showed up.
There were a lot of people, maybe 100. Hundreds of people.
Word spread fast. Everybody in town was there. But I just wondered, where are they all going, you know? So I went too.
So we dug a hole as close as we could. And before I got the hole dug, he accidentally slid on his own and went into the hole.
Sort of graceful. I mean, it was so big, it just took its time. Just sort of the side caved in a little bit.
He rolled in, he slipped in and rolled up, belly up.
When they finally rolled it into the hole, you know, everybody sort of quieted down. And they were kind of respectful. They're kind of sad to see it go.
Oh, I don't know how to explain it. Something that you never think of, dying. You always hear stories that a whale is a passed on fisherman's soul.
Made me think how small I was. Yeah. There's a lot of people that think, oh, I'm so big. I'm so great. No matter how powerful they are, something will happen in life that will cause people to say, how small am I anyway?
We're both mammals who have reached the pinnacle of our place, and they just seem to be close to us. I feel close to whales.
And we buried it 6 feet over the top of it.
Dug up gravel and stuff and covered it all over.
And I've dug grave, you know, for humans here in Cutler also. It just seemed different to bury something with no box. Just putting raw earth right back onto his body.
You picture him as being immortal, like a free soul, free will out there. You just don't see him dying. It was sad. It was very sad.
And it took about 2.5 hours, 3 hours to dig the hole.
and then fill it back in. And by noon time, it was all finished. I think I got like $300 a Barry was thinking. I'd done the town a favor, actually. Maybe the whale, too. How do we know?
It was just a day's work for me to help bury a whale. I mean, it was an oddity that to bury a whale.
Just something weird that had happened and something unforetold. And
if you never did see it, you couldn't understand it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's still there. He's still laying there. That's about all I can tell you about the whale.
I haven't been down there since. Maybe I'll go down and take a stroll over.
That's the way things went. And this is from Mars Allen of Lubeck, Maine. Just another fish story.
Just another fish story.
I don't want you to think that all American radio is about poor towns and animals. There was a bit of a, I didn't realize, but those two were quite similar in that they were non-narrated and got to some really big ideas through these really kind of sweet, sad stories.
We were going to ask you, like, to explain in 10 words or less, what the hell is going on in American radio? Like, how does it work?
Okay, I'll try. Maybe 12 words. So National Public Radio is our national system. It's not funded by the government. It's listener-funded and foundation-funded. And there are stations in every small city, town, that are member stations to National Public Radio. They pay for some of the programming. And then all of these local stations are largely funded by listeners who call in and give money every year. Some of the programming goes out across the country. Some stations, if they have enough money, can create their own programming and hire reporters to do things locally. Most independent producers are trying to sell to National Public Radio, or some of the shows that are broadcast nationally made by some of the bigger stations, like in New York, San Francisco. Have you heard of This American Life? Are you guys familiar with that? That's actually produced by Chicago Public Radio, which the Third Coast was a part of for 8 years. It's kind of, it's a strange time right now in American radio because a lot of the shows that are buying work from independents have been canceled. The young generation that's coming into radio is not coming from broadcast journalism studies. They're people that have been listening and think, that the line between who's a radio producer and who's a multimediaist and who's a photographer and who's a writer is really blending. And it's a great time to be trying to encourage people and inspire people to think about radio as an art form as well as information and news.
Shall we hear more?
So this is a piece made by a young producer who worked with an organization called the Radio Rookies in New York. And that what they do is they go into neighborhoods and gather 5 to 10 kids who are interested in telling stories about their lives, mostly about sort of their own lives. They're not really reporting on news or social issues, but they're telling about their experiences as teenagers growing up in their neighborhoods. So Rocky had a problem with obesity, and he had never really fully explored it for himself. I think this piece gave him a way to think about the issue, talk to his family about it, and talk to himself about it. And we'll hear that next. It's called My Struggles with Obesity.
You know when you tell a made-up story so much that you begin to believe it? What most of my family says, when my twin sister and I were in my mom's stomach, I took up all the room and squished her into my mother's ribs. That's why they think I came out first. But the reality is, we were both big babies. My mom said when we were born, we were a medical miracle, one in a million, because we were both exactly the same weight and length, 8 pounds, 2 ounces, and 21 and a half inches. Now I'm 6'1", and Samia is 5'9". She's skinny, and I am not.
My bed, the wheels are popping off.
Why?
Because you're fat.
You need a sense of humor in order to survive in my family. Because my family jokes a lot.
What are some of the jokes you say to me?
You have a belly button size of an ozone layer. A turtle could chase you.
A turtle could chase me? Sammy, stop right now. I want you to stop making fun of me.
There are 8 kids in my family, plus my parents. Half of us are overweight, but nobody is nearly as big as me. One day, I decided to record what a normal day of eating is like for me.
This is Rocky. I'm at the bowl with the cheese. It's 205. There's only one piece of cheese in there. I taste the piece. It tastes really good. So I want much more. I'm ready to eat my cheese.
When I'm really hungry, I usually eat whatever is quick to make. And usually the food that's quick to make is quick to eat.
nice 4 pieces of cheese.
Which means I can eat more.
And there's extra eggs on the table, so I'm gonna eat that with my cheese.
When I was having breakfast, my grandmother and my oldest sister, Sinat, were in the kitchen with me.
I just finished my eggs and cheese, and now I'm gonna drink a 12-ounce can of orange soda.
Egg and cheese and water and juice. And cereal.
What are you doing? You are, you fat blimp.
I want to show them how much you eat.
That's what I'm doing this for, you moron. You're not that skinny yourself. Yeah, you weigh 100 and 200 and what pounds?
Anyway,
everybody quiet!
It gets really frustrating when I feel ganged up on. But the truth is the truth. I do weigh a lot. Especially compared to my twin.
We're gonna go weigh ourselves, Tanya? You wanna go weigh ourselves?
Yes, let's go hurry up. I gotta go eat again. 156, because I just ate.
How much do you think I weigh?
I think you weigh 420.
Yeah, but it's not gonna weigh it.
So then it's gonna say error.
What does it say?
Error, holy shoot, it does say error.
Error is my weight.
Oh my god, it does say error. You feel good about yourself? Man, error.
Think about a joke. Think about a joke. You're bony, you're skinny, you're ugly.
Man, you weigh an error amount.
Okay. Even the scale at the doctor's office doesn't go up to my weight. So if I want to weigh myself, I have to go down the block to the pharmacy.
I'm going to put a quarter in.
And pay money.
It said your computerized weight is 393.7 pounds. Then it says, find out what your future holds. Press your horoscope sign.
People write down the future for me all the time. Once I went to see this nutritionist for a checkup. I swear, she was like the size of a pencil. And yet she dared to tell me all the things about my weight and what problems she thinks I'm going through. She doesn't know me, but she tells me you're gonna die if you keep putting on weight. She told me that my knees are going to break, that my hips are going to crack, and all this other junk that I put in through one ear and right out of the other. But when my family and people I love tell me the same thing, I listen to them. They say if I just continue getting bigger and bigger, I'm going to have blood problems, joint problems, I'm going to catch a heart attack, and eventually, I'm going to die.
Okay, what is your name?
Abe Taya.
What is your relationship to me?
Your dad, of course.
Okay, what do you think about my weight?
Well, your weight is a little too much for you, Rock, because if you get my age, you're going to see how hard it is to lose 1 pound. You're going to wish you lost weight when you're young, because if you start to walk a lot and get into sports and pay more attention to you, Rock, you're going to trim up a lot. You understand, Rock?
Is my weight a problem for you?
No. I love you what you are. It doesn't matter weight or no weight. I just worry about you because I'm not here forever. You know, you're heavyweight while we live, and imagine when we die, you're going to be more heavier. We want you to realize it, that you have to lose all that heavyweight and love yourself because you're a very handsome fella, very smart, and that's what my main problem is. I worry about you every day, Rock. Of course, you're my son, and I'll love you forever.
I really don't get myself. I know my parents feel sad for me. Who wouldn't? I'm the fattest kid in my house. I'm the fattest person on my block. I'm the fattest teenager I know.
Come on, 5, 8, 7, 6.
My mom tried to put me on those Taibo videos.
Now give me some!
I put my sweatpants on and started stretching. Turned on the video, saw the guy doing backflips and thought, you must be kidding me. I started moving my hands, turned off the video, sat down, and started watching TV. 15-minute workout, more like a 15-minute heart attack. Sammy thinks I can put more effort into trying to lose weight.
Sammy, I want to know, my question to you is, why do you make fun of me, and do you think it's funny making fun of me?
Because it makes me laugh, and you're fat, man. Get out.
Yes, I'm fat, but do you know, I don't want to be fat. If I had a choice, I swear to God, I would want to be
fat. But no, that's incorrect. You have a choice to lose weight. Just now, you ate a pint of ice cream. Is that necessary?
Did I really?
You took 10 crab legs from the store. Is that necessary?
Did I really do that, Samuel?
I swear to Allah.
I ate a pint of ice cream just now.
You ate a pint of ice cream, strawberry ice cream.
Just now?
Yesterday night.
Yesterday night, Samuel? It was
fun. Yesterday, you ate 3 bowls of cereal.
It was not strawberry ice cream. It was fudge ice cream.
If you're fat, you have to have something good about you.
Like, oh, he wears nice clothes. You could probably dress ugly if you were skinny, and no one would say anything about it. I wear baggy name brand clothes like Burberry and Ralph Lauren, a big silver chain that says God in Arabic, a do-rag and a baseball cap over that. It makes me unique, this time in a good way. My weight is really not that much of a problem for me at school. I join school activities, hang out with my friends, and I am a peer mediator. I probably have more friends if I was skinnier. But mostly, people at school don't tease me because they fear me. They don't know what a big person like me might do to them. But when I come home from school and sit down, my parents are on my case. My mother's always encouraging me and pushing me to try to lose weight.
You think I'm big because of what?
Because, you look like a pig. You eat like a pig.
I eat sometimes because of depression, like when I get too much homework or like when I have too much pressure. Teenagers, it's common. Every teenager has peer pressure.
Hey, eat healthy food. You don't have to eat candy and sugar and soda and hide in the ice cream in the refrigerator. It's, come on, for God's sake, man. Come on, we have to put a lock on the refrigerator now.
I'm tired of seeing my mom crying, begging me to lose weight. I'm scared my obesity is going to cause her health problems. For all the stress I am probably causing her by lying to her, telling her that I'm going to change my ways and start to lose weight, and then nothing really happens. My mom is starting to get tired of my lies, but she never gives up hope.
Hey, this is Rocky. It's Wednesday morning, 10:52, and I'm with my mom sitting in the living room. Yesterday, I decided that I'm going to go on a diet. Hey, Mom, what was the deal?
The deal is to make you lose weight, give you $1,000 every 30 pounds. First 30 pounds, $1,000. Second 30 pounds, $1,500.
Are you serious?
I swear to God.
Okay, do you think that's going to help me lose weight?
I'm hoping to God.
Do I have any time limits to lose the weight?
Start it from now.
It's not like, Rocky, you lose 30 pounds, you could do it by the next 3 years.
No, this year.
Okay. Anything else?
You can do it. Trust me, you can do it. We're all looking for that day for you to lose weight. You make everybody happy, just lose weight. You make it easier for my life. Every night I go to sleep thinking about your weight. They're making me very depressed.
Anything else?
That's it.
I love you.
I love you too.
Hey, this is Rocky. I'm in my bedroom. So I was like, you know what? I can do this. I can prove to her and I can get that money. So while at work, I decided I needed something that I can write and look at that would help me to defeat my biggest obstacle, which is buying candy and junk food. So I wrote down this thing and I'm going to duct tape it on my wall, on my shelf. It says, what I am now and what I will be if I don't change. I'm fat, ugly, huge, sweaty, slob, monster, big for nothing, no good. Food has my life, nothing to live for. And here's another sheet. I wrote this to give me some sort of my hope to God goal. It says, what I wish I could be. Skinny, cute, loved by everyone, accepted everywhere, high self-esteem, high confidence, more friends, comfortable, cool, happy about me, no more self-shame, love me, love life, love my body, abs, no flubber, no fat, no extra skin, no stretch marks. I actually feel proud while doing this. Makes me happy.
What would it take for me to lose weight, do you think?
I swear to God.
Yes.
Just sew your mouth together with a big needle, a threat.
Hey, what happened to the loving mother?
Go on the diet, Rocky.
So tomorrow we're going to go on the Hollywood diet?
Yes, Rocky. If you're willing to go, Rocky.
I'm going
to
really try my hardest.
Okay, my hardest? What's my hardest?
My hardest.
My best.
My best.
Okay.
From a 1 to 10, how good do you think I'll do?
If you put your mind to it, you do a 10. That's it.
Sure?
No, that's it. Just get on my face.
You're the best.
Okay, just get on my face. When you lose weight, I'll tell you the best.
Hey, this is Rocky. I'm waiting for my food. It's about done.
I guess I'm never going to be the best. Remember the sheet of words I put on my door? Well, my sister Sammy thought it was a joke, and she started laughing. Pretty soon, I thought it was a joke too, and I took it down.
Bye!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I was just messing up my shelf. It was another bullcrap thing that didn't work.
It's a large amount of turkey with gravy and mashed potatoes.
The best time when I feel so happy about eating is when I'm all alone, watching TV. Just me, nobody looking at me. I can lie and say I didn't eat that. It's kind of like my own world.
I'm going to sit down and watch TV with it. Hopefully, be happy. Oh, everybody left, so it's just me in the house. Hey. Do you make fun of me?
I try the nice way for you. I always try the nice way, it doesn't work. I try the bad way, it doesn't work. I give up, I just call you a fat boy.
Do you think it bothers me?
Of course it does. I know it does, trust me, it does.
That's not true, it doesn't bother me.
If it doesn't bother you, you would never ask me twice.
When I'm in a really happy mood, the jokes don't get to me. I just let them motivate me to try to lose weight. But then when I'm sad, the jokes get to me and make me sadder. When it's jokes like you have no kneecaps, ha ha ha, it's funny. But when it's jokes like Rocky, come on, who's going to marry you? Or Rocky, look at you? That makes me mad. It makes me want to eat more.
All right, this is Rocky. It's 1:40 a.m. I wasn't planning to put my recorder on, but I am. Because this is what I call the mood. Sounds funny, I know. To where I'm sitting all alone by myself, no one around me. That's what's happening now. No one's around me. I talk to myself. I think about my life. I just get depressed. I want to be skinny so bad. I know that would make a world of difference for me. Oh, I know so much. How that would make everybody happy. Why can't I just say no? No. See, right now I want to eat. Oh, wow. I just thought of an ice cream in the refrigerator that I saved yesterday. See, now I bet you $5 I'm going to eat that ice cream eventually tonight. I'm going to try not to. I don't want to eat. I'm not going to eat. I'm not going to eat. For WNYC, this is Rookie Reporter Rocky.
A few interesting things about this is that after this aired, Rocky heard from all sorts of people from all over the place. He heard from anorexic rich women on the Upper East Side. He heard from kids also having that problem. He got a TV gig out of this. He had like a subsidized operation to sew his stomach shut, you know, how they staple it. And he's actually lost a ton of weight, and he's sort of out there. He made another story about that process, another radio story. And he's actually doing great, and he talks, he's really outgoing and shares a story with people. And this is kind of a success story. I think the radio really helped him kind of come around. It was also this beautiful portrait of his family. So there's the issue and then this glimpse into the lives of these people that we would never, ever have the honor to be with in that way. So I think, too, what radio is so great at is destroying prejudice, because you, especially with people that are unattractive, most of us in our society shy away from that. And you come to radio without any pictures. If you saw Rocky on the street, you might cross the road to avoid or not sit next to him on the subway. Now you feel like you want to just throw your arms around and give him a big hug. I mean, it's really one of the powerful things that radio does, I think.
For sure. Should we hear a shorter piece?
Yes.
Something completely different, maybe.
Okay. Okay, so this is from a show that I really love called Wiretap. Has anyone heard that show? Hosted by a guy named Jonathan Goldstein, who used to do quite a lot on This American Life. Now he has his own show on the CBC.
Welcome to the Automated Relationship Replacement Hotline, Prototype 1.4, patent pending. And I'm here to help you through this difficult time. If you've recently ended a romantic relationship, press 1. If you believe yourself to be suffering from empty nest syndrome, press. You have pressed 1. Ended romantic relationship. If your friends are tired of hearing you complain and you would like some time to lament your fate, please do so after the tone. To forego this feature, press 9.
You have pressed 9. Let's proceed. If you would like to hear a well-meaning, but ultimately ineffectual, pep talk, press 1. If you would like to proceed directly to the substitute love function, press 2. You have pressed 2. To massage the back of my neck with affection, press 1. To squeeze my hand, press 2. You have pressed 1. That felt nice. If you would like me to tussle your hair in a return show of affection, press 1. If you would like me to verbally assure you, press 2. You have pressed 2. You're the best. If you would like to be told that I love you, press the star key. To forego this feature, press 9. Are you still there? You have pressed the star key. I love you. To tell me you love me back, press 1. To forego this feature, press. You have pressed 1. You love me. Thank you. To quantify your love, enter the amount of love you have for me on the keypad, followed by the pound key. You have entered 999. You really love me very much. Thank you. To nuzzle your face into my hair and tell me all your hopes and dreams, press 1. To confide in me your secret fears, press 2. You have pressed 2. If you'd like a moment to curl up in a fetal ball on the couch, bed, or floor, press 9. To immediately record your fears into our database, press. You have pressed 9. I will wait. Please press 7 when you are ready. Before we begin, if you would like me to play some instrumental music to underscore your pain, press 1. You have pressed 1. Let's proceed. Go ahead. Tell me your fears. Please proceed. Are you still there? You may begin at any time. I am waiting. I am patiently waiting. Please continue.
I should say that it was Jonathan Goldstein and Mira Burtwin-Tonick. Give the producers their due credit. And that's not exactly typical of the show, but it's as delightful as the show gets. You can podcast it along with a lot of the things that we're hearing today. You can probably pull off the internet to listen to more, including our show, I should say, Resound, on the Third Coast Festival show.
What was that again?
Resound. Oh, Resound. Saturdays at 1 on WBEZ.
I think we've got time for at least one more little piece, maybe another shorty, maybe.
Okay. Well, let's play one. This is a piece by a team of producers, Anne Hepperman and Kara Oler, and they made this actually for Third Coast back in 2004, I think, where we invited producers to send us ideas for stories, and we picked a word. We picked the idea of thirst, and invited any interpretation of the idea of thirst. Producers sent us pitches, ideas, and then we picked 4 of those. And this was one of the ones we picked. This was one of their first pieces, too. They've since gone on to do great things together. But it's called And I Walked. And it's about, they were living in Arizona at the time, and it's about the issue of Mexicans crossing the border to America, sort of pursuing the thirst for the American dream, was the spin they had on it. The author that reads at the beginning is, just to give you some context, Charles Bowden, who's quite well known in the States for writing about these issues, and he's lived in the desert forever. I think you'll hear that in his voice, actually. So this is And I Walked by Anne Hepperman and Kara Oler. It's about 6 minutes long.
They play a game here, but nobody watches from a box seat. The players are called wets by those who hunt them. They cross a hot desert, a dry desert, and they cross with 1 or 2 gallons of water. They walk 30, 40, 50, 60 miles in order to score. The goal line here means not 6 points, but a job. Here are the rules. Get caught, and you go back to Mexico. Make it across, and you get a job in the fields or the back rooms. Don't make it, and you die.
Crucé la semana pasada.
Sí, caminé 3 días.
3 noches caminando. Íbamos 4 personas.
Solo, caminando por el desierto.
I walk all day on the sun. By the end of the day, I only had 1 gallon of water. I started with 2 gallons.
Un traguito nomás y mojarse los labios nomás.
In the morning, started walking again. Walk all day, and then still walked part of the night.
Agents found the body of a man believed to be an illegal immigrant hanging from a tree in the desert.
The deaths bring the total number of deaths by crossers in Arizona to 106 for this year. Authorities
people have died trying to cross the Mexican border into Arizona.
There are no springs or streams, and no one lives here. No one. But still they keep coming. Day after day, night after night. Some will move only during daylight because they fear snakes. Some refuse to wear hats. And I cannot help but wonder what kind of experiences produce people willing to take on such ground.
It's a sign of desperation.
They pay better in the U.S. than here. I've just arrived from work, and I start at 7 in the morning, and then I finish at 6. And they paid me $6 for the whole day.
If they could live this fairly good life at their places, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't be here.
With heat and thirst, the body temperature soars, and the brain seems to cook. The flesh feels electric with pain, as each cell screams out its complaint. People in such circumstances tear off their clothes in the hope of being cooled. Sometimes the Border Patrol finds corpses with the mouth stuffed with sand.
Bravo 14. One incident that I came upon was my eye caught this one bush, and I noticed there's some legs. There was someone lying down underneath a bush. And I thought whoever it was deceased, but when I got up on her, it was a female. She was lying down on her stomach, ready to die.
You start blistering. A lot of blisters on your mouth, around your lips. You start hallucinating and you start thinking, oh, I'm gonna die. But you can't think clearly because It's not you anymore. You start thinking about death. You start thinking if you're going to heaven or if you're going to hell, or I mean, like, if you're going to die in the desert, then you're not going to be found by anybody, and you're going to be eaten by animals.
The coyotes wanted to eat me. There are a lot of coyotes. The animals wanted to eat me. There were 5, and I was staying still and quiet. And they were approaching me, so I put my bottles around me to scare them off. And I had a lighter that I used to fend them off. And I was by myself. The animals were waiting for me to die.
You don't even think. You don't have no brain to think about anything.
Coyotes. A lot of coyotes.
people is going to the United States hoping to find a job and send money to their families back home, and what they find is death. They never make it over there, and they never make it back home.
The desert tonight is an enormous theater full of tracks made by men and women and sometimes children, all inching north. They play a game here. We play a game here.
I think, you know, it's very common to say, oh, have you seen any good movies lately, or what are you reading? And I feel like radio should be really considered in that same way. You talk about it at the dog park or on the subway or at dinner, and so it's our little promotion of, like, radio really is an art form that should be thought about critically and discussed critically. There's even a vocabulary maybe that's a little different to talk about radio, but it's a really simple one, and basically it brings out a lot of emotion. It's really easy to do, so I would encourage you to talk about radio in public. It's okay.
Julie Shapiro, thank you very much for coming, and well, see you next time.
See you in Chicago.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, thank you to Julie Shapiro for coming all the way over here and sharing her radio insights with us. If you want to hear more about Julie's stuff and dip into an archive of more than 750 radio pieces, I recommend you have a look at www.thirdcoastfestival.org's website. Also, if you want some more American radio insights, try www.prx.org. Plenty to listen to right there. If you're interested in listening to a Danish piece with an English transcript, then we have one now. The very first Danish piece we made, The Golden Horns, is now available with an English transcript, and we'll post that up on our blog site along with a lot more links. The blog you'll find with a link from our website, which is, of course, www.thirdear.dk. Thirdear International is entirely funded by the Arts Council of Denmark. My name is Tim Hinman, and remember, if you liked what you heard here on Thirdear, feel free to send it on.